No, this is not a story, but it is a prop that we'll get to in a second. I want to talk about the Omer and the counting of the Omer today. But before I do that, I want to talk about continual process, continual improvement, something that comes out of quality assurance, quality control, the industrial world, and certainly you've all seen it on your computer apps, where there are continual upgrades, where the normal cycle of a product used to be you'd finish it and then you'd wait to the next one to put out whatever improvements or fixes came along. And with the speed of modern life, there has been a notion that we will constantly look to improve what it is we're doing. That's a beautiful notion from industry, but it is a notion, of course, which has existed long before that. If you study or are interested at all in Japanese craftsmanship, you'll see that same notion. And Japanese potters spend a life continually making small incremental improvements to things to become ever better at their craft. And that notion, of course, is one that we're familiar with in Judaism as well. We like to think of Yom Kippur as the day in which we take stock and recount the whole world, but really with things like Tachanun in the morning and Musar and other Jewish spiritual practices, there was a notion that we can continually improve constantly, that it's not something that's punctuated. So why do I begin my comments to you about this notion of continual improvement for the Omer? I think it's because to understand the Omer, we have to look at its history to understand how it developed over time and that it was really a static occurrence, but something that developed. And the very first thing we know is that the bringing of the sheaves of barley would happen actually on the second day, Pesach. The rabbis and the sectarians differed on that notion, but it would be brought, and it was a barley sheaf. And from that time of offering, you would eat no grain until the new offering, which is on Shavuot, where you'd bring new grain and offer an offering of two loaves of bread. So the way this worked in terms of those earliest days, and the reason I'm talking about continual improvement also, I forgot to say, is that we did a survey recently of members asking about our chronicle and what is working for the congregation with the chronicle and where there's area for improvement. And one of the things that came back was an interest in, I think, more basic Judaism and also a how-to of Judaism. So this is an example of fulfilling both of those to some degree. So while this is not a practice that we would actually do today, if we don't have a temple, people would bring their barley to the temple, and the Kohanim would be the ones that would take off their shoes, and they would take the sheep, and it's a wave offering. And it would go like this, and you may recognize it somewhere else. Anyone recognize that?
Yes.
The lulav. The lulav. And of course, the symbolism is quite clear, and the midrash will talk about this all there. You're giving the offering to the one who owns both the heavens above and the world below, as well as, of course, the dog who holds the four directions of the wind. So the offering has this other connection, of course, with the holidays that we see. But it appears originally just to be that, a grain offering, and that would seem to be the end. Perhaps it's because all crops are originally understood to be God's, and it is that process of bringing an offering which releases the rest of the crops so that we could enjoy and eat them. But there is a conflation of all of these different factors which begins to develop this incremental spiritual improvement and relevance of the practice for different eras of Jews. And one of the things is this notion of the wave offering. Apparently, it is that waving which is more essential than the offering itself and which connects that second day of Passover when we bring the barley to the very end where we bring two loaves of bread. Ramban, our great medieval commentator in the earlier oral tradition before that, notes that originally barley, you have to realize in today's world, we look for breads that have all sorts of whole grains, but barley was animal food. It was not fit for people. Sometimes in some of the different offerings, if someone had to bring a barley offering, such as a suspected adulteress, we understood it was because they were acting like animals. And yet at the end, at Shavuot, you bring bread made from wheat, which is human food. And so Nachmanides, Ramban, gives this very interesting notion that the process of counting the Omer is for us to move from our animalistic side into our human side. In other words, the process of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of leaving Egypt, of being a slave who has limited free will and thoughts, and we're more driven by our desires, is a sense of self-mastery so that at the end we can be more human, however we may define that to be. So this interim period was a period of continual improvement. And over time, and now we're into the later Middle Ages, and we're talking about the 1300s, that gets brought into the realm of Kabbalah. And I think this is what most people understand the Omer to be now. Very strangely, the latest novel is what people know. So here's Simon Jacobson's Counting the Omer Calendar, in which each day is connected to some sort of spiritual development on this Kabbalistic tree. And I'm not going to go into all the details of it, but people know it. It comes from the notion that we should bring it mikem, from you, and this is the notion that we're shedding our materiality, our animal nature, the part of us that's driven by desire, by focusing on these spiritual elements, these midot or character traits. And so we have this very ancient ritual, which begins really just with a notion of a grain offering, an agricultural holiday. And over time, our Jewish people wanted to know, how can this have significance for us? And they brought it from the most ancient, maybe pagan aspects of the ancient world in which we're thanking directly God for the bounty of the earth into a less tangible sort of religious practice. I think that ultimately, when we look at our own lives, that notion of continual improvement is something that we all want. It's never easy. Sometimes it becomes lip service because it's quite rolls off the tongue easy that I'm working on myself and trying to get better. But the Omer, as so many other Jewish practices, teach us that change is a necessary part of the tradition, that it is built in from the very beginning, but that the goal is that we develop ourselves so that we can gain greater levels of self-mastery. Ezehu HaGibor HaKovesh et Yitzro, who is the mighty person, the person who masters his or her impulses, the Yetzer Hara. In other words, to be a human is to disavow those earlier levels of the human being. So while we are counting towards Shavuot, which represents Matan Torah, the giving of a document whose whole goal is how we can be better as individuals, as a society, it's how we can focus on higher values rather than just lower, we see that notion of continual improvement, where we each find our way in our own lives to look for ways we transform more basic functionings and needs, whether that's work, or food, or relations, and raise them up as the Kohen did with the barley offering long ago. Shabbat Shalom.